the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price. Andrew Cuomo. Under fire.
To strip the governor of his emergency executive powers.
That is the big story this Wednesday. The first steps now underway to rein in New York's embattled governor. Family Life's Brandon Dixon gets us started.
That's right, Bill. Governor Cuomo's emergency executive powers that were given to him last March could soon be stripped away following the nursing home scandal that's rocked the country for weeks now. Two downstate Democrats have drafted legislation that would revoke the governor of those powers. They accuse Andrew Cuomo of obstruction of justice for failing to properly report the number of nursing home deaths from COVID-19. A letter sent to the New York State Assembly and signed by several Democrats also mentions the possibility of impeaching Cuomo. Earlier this week, the governor denied he covered up coronavirus deaths in the state, despite his own secretary admitting to it. The Cuomo administration initially reported just over 9,000 nursing home deaths from the virus. Today, that number is over 15,000. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. One of the Democrats pushing to strip Cuomo of his emergency powers is Assemblyman Ron Kim, who was on the video call last week with the governor's secretary, Melissa DeRosa. Kim describes his reaction when DeRosa admitted to covering up COVID nursing home deaths.
Did she just really say what she said? And did she just implicate herself of committing, you know, a potential cover-up?
Kim says it's clear this governor was trying to hide crucial information regarding the health care crisis. Republicans say stripping Cuomo of his emergency powers doesn't go nearly far enough, though. They want him removed from office. Texas tundra. That is the other big story at noon.
It was -2 degrees. We were really scared.
Make no mistake about it, folks. This month has been one for the history books in the Lone Star State. Old Man Winter delivering a knockout blow to the power grid in Texas. Over 3 million still in the dark and at least 9 deaths from the wicked weather. This woman has been without power for days in Houston.
Poor planning on the state of Texas's part. We knew that this storm was coming, but there could have been a much better job with being open and honest as to what's going on, because we're starting to find out what's going on, but a lot of it was covered up and everybody's just shifting blame around.
Clean energy now under the gun big time in Texas. Green energy has caused blackouts all across the state, with wind turbines freezing up and shutting down in the wicked cold. Governor Greg Abbott.
It just shows that fossil fuel is necessary for the state of Texas as well as other states. If the Biden administration is going to try to eradicate fossil fuels in the United States, every state is going to constantly have challenges like what America has seen take place in Texas right now.
Mark Morano is the author of Green Fraud. He says the far left's insatiable appetite to rid the country of fossil fuels is fueling the problem right now in Texas.
There have been warnings before about the over-reliance on these wind panels, especially in the cold, driven by fears of the climate crisis, not because, oh, this is great energy, let's add it. It was done for political and financial reasons.
Winter storm warnings up again today for millions of folks all across the South, with at least 20 people dead from the wicked weather. The storm also impacting the COVID-19 vaccination effort across the nation today. Dr. Chris Rustin is with the Georgia Department of Health.
We've been in contact with CDC, and they've all advised us that there's going to be significant delays this week in vaccine shipment.
Vaccine deliveries have been hampered at two major distribution sites in Memphis and in Louisville because of the nasty weather down south. President Biden taking his COVID-19 recovery plan on the road last night. He spoke at a town hall in Milwaukee. Getting kids back at school, the big issue, and the president had to clarify this comment from his spokeswoman, Jen Psaki. Here's what Jen Psaki said earlier this month.
His goal that he set is to have the majority of schools open by day 100 of his presidency. So at least one day a week, hopefully it's more.
That's not true. It was a mistake in the communication. K through eighth grade, because they're the easiest to open. The goal will be 5 days a week.
The president also pledged by the end of July to have 600 million doses of COVID vaccine for every single American, with a return to normal by Christmas. The president misspoke, however, about the vaccine situation he inherited.
We came into office. There's no backlog. I mean, there was nothing in the refrigerator, figuratively and literally, 10 million doses a day that were available. We've upped that in the first 3 weeks that we were in office to significantly more than that.
In reality, President Biden came into office with the COVID-19 vaccine already here thanks to Operation Warp Speed. Charlie Kirk is with Turning Point USA.
Operation Warp Speed, which was again considered to be a near impossibility, delivered a vaccine ahead of schedule. President Trump promised it by Christmas. It was actually delivered before then. And so Joe Biden is trying to rewrite history, and it's incredibly irresponsible.
President Biden also taking some heat today for this comment last night. He was talking about the racial disparity in getting folks the vaccine.
Not everybody in the community, in the Hispanic and the African-American community, know how to get on line to determine how to get in line for that COVID vaccination.
And that comment not going over well today. The president says he'll spend $1 billion on public education to help minority populations get the COVID-19 vaccine. It's Ash Wednesday, and it's looking a little different in the era of COVID-19.
Smudged foreheads and blessings? It'll be DIY this Ash Wednesday, the first of the COVID-19 era. The Vatican has instructed church leaders to hold drive-through services and give out to-go baggies of ashes to bless and apply at home. For Catholics, today marks the start of the Lenten period leading up to Easter.
That's Deborah Rodriguez reporting. Still to come this Wednesday, could Andrew Cuomo be out of office? Mass vaccination set to start in Buffalo and a vaccine registry in Pennsylvania.
Well, good afternoon to all. We've got a quiet day underway, a cold day, but another snowmaker is on the way. And I'll have the details on that as we aim for the weekend coming up. The forecast in 10.
Already Kevin Williams checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Wednesday, February 17th, the first steps underway to take away Governor Cuomo's emergency powers given to him at the start of the pandemic. Democrats have started the process, accusing the governor of obstruction of justice for failing to properly report the number of nursing home deaths across the state. From Buffalo to the Bronx, New Yorkers are sounding off.
I don't know how much of this is negligence and how much of this is criminal.
In a pandemic, it's all new for all of us, and there's going to be a lot of mistakes made. I don't think there was any willful hiding of information.
He killed so many people, covered it up.
A letter sent to the New York State Assembly and signed by several Democrats also mentions the possibility of impeaching the governor, who continues to deny the cover-up despite his own secretary admitting to it. Teresa Sperry lost her 60-year-old mother to COVID after she was placed in a nursing home last March.
It's truly heartbreaking. You know, I have tried to keep it together emotionally. To hear this coming from him, I mean, almost a year later, the fact that he's still lying and covering his trail, it's insane. I cannot believe that we're going through this.
Sperry says all she wants to hear from Andrew Cuomo are the words, "I'm sorry." Then she wants to hear nothing else.
At least just sympathize with us. Try to have compassion. Feel how we feel. Don't go on air and say, who cares that they died? Because yes, we do care. And we do blame you.
The Cuomo administration initially reported just over 9,000 nursing home deaths from COVID. Today, that number is over 15,000. Erie County, New York Executive Mark Poloncar says the Buffalo Niagara Convention Center will be transformed into a mass vaccination site within a month.
Maybe not next week, maybe not the week after that, but possibly by the middle of March, possibly by the first week in April, which means we need to get our ducks in a row now. And that's what we're doing.
Holden Carr says the site will be able to do round-the-clock COVID vaccinations with more than 3,000 shots in arms a day.
The reason it hasn't been opened yet is because we don't have the vaccines to do it.
President Biden continues to push for mass vaccination sites all across the country with the goal of inoculating 300 million Americans by the end of June. A mass vaccination site in Lancaster County, PA, expected to get the green light today. Dr. Michael Ripchinski at Penn Medicine says the proposed site would go up at the former Bon Ton store at Park City Center.
A lot of advantages of having it centrally located on highway access, be able to handle traffic, over 7,000 parking spots, and 100,000 square feet. It's a huge area for us to be able to vaccinate.
Officials hope to vaccinate 6,000 people per day at that site. The shots in arms will start next month and continue through June in Lancaster County, PA. Pennsylvania Democrats calling for a COVID-19 vaccine registry to help the state improve its cumbersome and complicated vaccine distribution effort. More on that at noon from Family Life's Terry Diener.
Vaccine providers would be required to access the registry and prioritize registrants for scheduling appointments. Currently, the only way to book a vaccination appointment is to directly contact individual providers that are listed on a map on the health department's website. A House Republican spokesman said the caucus is also concerned with vaccination distribution, but questioned the need for legislation to force the health department to build a registry. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. Well, with high-risk high school sports now back in action in New York, school officials hope to have marching band and theater back again, too.
I think it's just a matter of making sure that you have the right spacing and setup.
The Greece, New York school superintendent Kathleen Grupman says she believes school arts programs can resume this spring if COVID cases continue to drop.
A musical, for example, we can work on with social distancing. If there is a problem, we can always stop and shut something down.
Right now, the state hasn't said whether it'll ease restrictions when it comes to school arts programs across New York. Governor Cuomo wants marijuana legalization to be part of the state budget that's due April 1st. Cuomo fears if it's not part of that spending plan, the effort will go up in smoke. Dr. Greg Lowen at Arnett Health in Elmira calls marijuana a gateway drug.
Marijuana, like alcohol, has the risk of addiction or dependence. And so there's a segment of people that get hooked on it, and it alters their life in an unpleasant way.
Lowen says the health risks associated with marijuana use haven't been studied enough. Governor Cuomo wants to commercialize the drug for the tax revenue. But critics say the last thing New York needs in the middle of a pandemic is legalized pot. State officials in Pennsylvania warning folks to be on the lookout for scammers trying to steal your money during the pandemic. The experts say fraudsters are getting bolder and trying to make a buck off of your misery. The State Department of Labor and Industry says con artists are trying to create fraudulent unemployment claims, or they're logging into existing claims and redirecting payments to themselves. Sunny time. 2 minute drill.
Yeah, let's start at the Australian Open, where Buffalo's Jessica Pegula won her first set 6-4 against Mechanicsburg's Jennifer Brady. But then Brady poured it on, winning the next two sets 6-2, 6-1 to advance to the semifinals. Brady on beating Pegula.
Yeah, you know, we're such good friends. I'm really happy for her success, and I know that we'll be having a lot more tough battles. And, you know, some may go her way, some may go mine. Luckily today, it went my way, and I'm really happy to be moving on to the semifinals here.
In the semis, Jennifer Brady will take on Karolina Muchova, who shocked the number one seed Ash Barty in three sets. Another shocker on the men's side. Number two seed Rafael Nadal loses in five sets. Tonight, Serena Williams continues her quest for 24 Grand Slams as she faces number three seed Naomi Osaka for a chance to get to the championship. On the ice, the Islanders blank the Sabres 3-0 in Buffalo. Buffalo head coach Ralph Krueger says, "We're struggling.
The early starts are killing us, and we're just not getting any free energy right now. We're not getting any momentum on our side. And, you know, we need to find ways to enter the games better."
In Pittsburgh, the Penguins fall to the Capitals 3-1. New Jersey out of quarantine and beat the Rangers in Madison Square Garden 5-2. In the NBA, the Raptors beat Milwaukee 124-113. Hey, no Kevin Durant, no Kyrie Irving for the Nets in Phoenix, and Brooklyn down by 24 points. But they rallied to beat the Suns 128-124 behind James Harden's 38 points.
Got down 20 some at halftime.
time, and we didn't give up. We didn't quit. We kept fighting and cut the deficit down and kept fighting and give ourselves a chance to win at the end of the game.
And the Steelers and Cowboys will meet in the Hall of Fame game August 5th in Canton, Ohio to kick off the NFL preseason. The two were to have met in the game last year, but was canceled due to the pandemic. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delphiette.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Wednesday edition of the Noon Report. Houston, we have a problem. The very latest on Texas's power outage. COVID recovery plan unveiled in Milwaukee. And walking 6 miles through a foot of snow to get vaccinated. Oh, yeah, she's 90 years old.
Sunday was the 203rd birthday of a monumentally important figure of American history, one that understood what it means that every human is made in the image of God. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Frederick Douglass was a former slave, abolitionist, supporter of women's suffrage, orator, writer, advisor to presidents, diplomat, and Christian, which is one of the most misunderstood elements of his story. Born in Talbot County, Maryland in 1818, Douglass's mother was a slave. His father might have been her owner. Douglass was sent to work in the Baltimore home of Hugh Ault. Ault's wife violated both her husband's instructions and the law by teaching Douglass to read. After two attempts to escape, Douglass finally succeeded with the help of Anna Murray, a free black woman from Baltimore. Disguised as a sailor, he made his way to New York. Douglass married Murray, and the couple settled in New Bedford, Massachusetts. Douglass joined a number of anti-slavery societies. He began subscribing to William Lloyd Garrison's journal, The Liberator. His eloquence and powerful personal story made Douglass a popular speaker at abolition rallies. In 1845, Douglass published his first autobiography called Narrative of the Life of Frederick Douglass, an American Slave. The book was so eloquent that some question whether it could have even been written by a black man. It became an immediate bestseller and was published both in America and in Europe. To avoid being arrested and sent back to the Alds as a runaway, Douglass spent 2 years in Britain, in Ireland, giving lectures to packed houses and meetings. There, he met Thomas Clarkson, one of the original British abolitionists. Although he was a strong advocate for Irish home rule, the British were so impressed with Douglass, they raised the money to purchase his freedom from the Alds, which enabled him to return to America safely. Back in the U.S., he began publishing the North Star, his first abolitionist paper. Its motto was, "Right is of no sex, truth is of no color, God is the father of us all, and we are all brethren." During the Civil War, Douglass advised President Lincoln on the treatment of black Union soldiers. He later discussed black suffrage with Lincoln's successor, Andrew Johnson. From 1889 to 1891, Douglass served as minister in residence and consul general, and Douglass also sought to reconcile with the Ault family, meeting with Thomas Ault himself, an act in keeping with his Christian convictions. Frederick and Anna had 5 children. In February 1895, Douglass died of a massive stroke or heart attack. He was buried in Rochester, New York. Douglass was a deeply committed Christian, yet, or maybe we should say so, he was highly critical of the Christianity that he saw in America, especially the South. Now, skeptics have used some of these criticisms to paint Douglass as an atheist, but he set the record straight in the appendix of the narrative. "What I have said, respecting and against religion," he wrote, "I mean strictly to applying to the slaveholding religion of this land, with no possible reference to Christianity proper. I love the pure, peaceable, and impartial Christianity of Christ. I therefore hate the corrupt, slaveholding, women-whipping, cradle-plundering, partial, and hypocritical Christianity of this land." Frederick Douglass's life was a marvelous fusion of biblical teaching, personal conversion, piety, and social action. His life and work had a profound impact on the United States and beyond, and was shaped by a conviction that every human is made in the image of God. For a fuller account of Douglass's amazing life, come to Breakpoint.org and read Dr. Glenn Sunshine's article on Douglass, which is part of his series, Christians Who Changed the World. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
20 minutes past the hour. Let's take it outside. Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Really no rest for the winter weary. Sure nice to see some sunshine today, but the air temperatures remain well below normal. And the next weather maker is ahead. It's going to produce major ice from East Texas to Carolina and Virginia. Mainly snow in our region. Could be some hefty tallies in central and eastern Pennsylvania. For this afternoon, though, it's a mix of clouds and sunshine, the high in the 20s. Tonight, increasing clouds, a low in the teens. Snow will arrive south of I-80 late tonight in Pennsylvania and spread across the remainder of Pennsylvania tomorrow and into the southern tier of New York in the afternoon, ultimately into the rest of New York State tomorrow night. The high tomorrow in the 20s. Snow will then taper on Friday with high temperatures in the 20s. And again, we think there could be significant snow accumulations by Friday morning across central and eastern Pennsylvania, lighter amounts north and west.
All right, Kevin Williams, when's spring coming? That's what I want to know. If you're just joining us, here's some of the stories we're following for you today, Wednesday, February 17th. The lights are out in Texas for a third straight day. Massive power outages across the Lone Star State as wind turbines freeze up in the bitter cold. This business owner in Houston letting folks come into his store to stay warm.
The least we can do is open this furniture, let people come into a warmer place. Sofas plenty available, TVs plenty available, mattresses plenty available, and lots of hot food.
At least 20 deaths across the South being blamed on the wicked wintry weather. This landscaper in Memphis says, yeah, he's had enough.
I went through 208 bags of salt yesterday.
Over 3 million people still without power in Texas. Governor Greg Abbott has now launched an investigation.
The way that ERCOT has handled this entire situation has been completely unacceptable.
Abbott blaming ERCOT, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, for the state's massive power outages. ERCOT CEO Bill Magnus supports the investigation into his handling of the state's power grid.
I think the fundamental decisions that our operators made very likely could have prevented a catastrophic blackout.
And the misery continues again today across much of the South as our February freeze refuses to relent.
A lot of ice right now, places like Austin, San Antonio, east towards Lufkin, Texas, and that's headed in to Louisiana. The hour by hour today, it's snow to the north across Little Rock, Arkansas, to the south, a solid sheet of ice.
Forecaster Jeff Berardelli, the temps in the upper Midwest were well below zero earlier today. President Biden taking his COVID-19 comeback plan on the road last night, speaking at a town hall in Wisconsin. On opening schools, the president says,
the goal will be 5 days a week.
And when it comes to vaccinating the public,
by the end of July of this year,
the president says he hopes to have 600 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine by midsummer. He also thinks teachers should be in the front of the line to get the shot.
I think that teachers and the folks who work in the school, the cafeteria workers, another should be on the list of preferred to get a vaccination.
Teachers should absolutely be priority among those who we consider essential personnel.
Dr. Anthony Fauci says even though teachers should be first to get the shot, it's not necessary for them to be vaccinated to be back in school.
You should try and get as many teachers as you possibly can vaccinated as quickly as you possibly can. But to make it a sine qua non that you don't open a school until every teacher is vaccinated, I think is not workable, and probably most of the teachers would agree with that.
The country's pandemic point man, meantime, is moving the goalpost once again for vaccinating the general public against the virus. Family Life's Bob Price continues.
Yeah, Dr. Anthony Fauci is now saying it will likely be mid-summer before the majority of us will be able to get the shot. The infectious disease expert said last week that by April, it would be, in his words, open season for anyone and everyone to get vaccinated. Now speaking on CNN, Fauci says the timeline will be prolonged, maybe into mid to late May and early June. He predicted it could even be August before everyone is vaccinated. Bob Price, Family Life News.
Thank you, Bob. Britain's health regulator has just approved what will be the world's first COVID challenge study in which healthy volunteers will be deliberately infected with the coronavirus. Andrew Ketchpole, in charge of that study, he says it's a way to help develop vaccines against the new variants of the virus.
We're only going to be administering the amount of virus and to achieve infection.
As soon as we have established that they are infected, then we'll be administering antivirals purely as a preemptive measure.
90 people will be recruited for that study. A pro-life leader says it's time for those who care about the unborn to focus their attention less on the federal government and more on the local one.
Real battle is going to be in our own communities, in our state legislatures, and that's where we need to focus our efforts.
Mark Arrington with the group Created Equal says the vast majority of pro-life progress made in recent years has come at the state and the local levels. Three new heart studies show drinking more caffeinated coffee can reduce the risk of heart failure. Researchers studied more than 21,000 people over a 10-year period and found those who drank at least one cup of Joe a day decreased their heart failure risk by 5 to 12%. The trailblazing Christian recording artist Carmen has passed away. Carmen, well known for his dramatic storytelling and visually stunning concerts, the singer-songwriter passed away from pneumonia at a Vegas hospital last night. Carmen was 65. 25 minutes past the hour, you're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome back to another edition of Real Answers with Christopher Anderson. Wednesdays during the Noon Report, we tackle the tough topics facing today's families with licensed mental health counselor Christopher Anderson. And today we're discussing a topic that may be a little bit of a deja vu, unfortunately. It's something we'd addressed not that long ago, and that being when a Christian leader falls. And today it's in regards to the sexual abuse perpetrated by Christian apologist Ravi Zacharias.
Yeah, Brandon, when we spoke earlier this week and we're coming up with what we were going to be discussing today, and we kind of both knew this needed to be addressed again. And, you know, it is a subject that's so painful on so many levels for so many people that it is, again, important that we address it. And a little bit later in the segment, I'll offer up some suggestions and resources for folks who may have been a victim of abuse. But this latest investigation into the crimes committed by Ravi Zacharias has determined that he did, in fact, engage in criminal sexual abuse with several women, and this was, once again, shocked the Christian community.
Chris, I think that if you were like most people, this did come as a very real surprise.
It did, Brandon, and I was shocked. I've always admired Ravi's ability to explain and defend the gospel and our faith in Christ. So I'm really no different in that if I'm not careful, I can easily put folks like Ravi on a pedestal with the unfair and faulty assumption that somehow they've got it all together, aren't subject to the same temptations as the rest of us, at least to the same level. But once again, this highlights how careful we need to be and how we see our leaders in the faith and realize that they can definitely succumb to temptations, even though we are called as leaders to be held to a higher standard.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard not to do that, Chris. And for those Christians maybe that are struggling with this, how do we respond to this situation and others like it?
You know, I think there are a lot of things that we need to consider. Number one, I think we need to respond immediately when these types of allegations surface within, particularly if it's within your own organization. Those in leadership in the Ravi Zacharias International Ministries organization have put out several public statements, most recently with the findings of an independent investigation, as well as a public apology and request for forgiveness, because they admit that they blankly just couldn't believe that he would do that, and they defended him, and I can understand that. I definitely can understand that. So it's good to see that they have put out a request for forgiveness. And like I said, I can just imagine how hard it must have been in that organization trying to defend their leader. So we need to, as much as possible, show grace and forgiveness. However, we need to make sure that the victims are properly supported and cared for. That also includes properly engaging in investigations, both internally as well as externally with law enforcement. So again, Ravi Zacharias organization is doing this, I believe. And number two, we need to prayerfully consider how we're going to continue to support ministries that may choose to continue to operate under new leadership. If you've been following the Ravi Zacharias ministry and you have been either contributing and or utilizing their resources, just I would encourage you to carefully monitor future communications that come out from their organization where this has happened. They may make organizational and missional decisions which you may not feel are ones that you can continue to support, and that's okay. Prayerfully ask God where you can receive additional spiritual feeding and education, and or where you can donate money if you have been supporting the Ravi Zacharias organization or other organizations where this has occurred. Thirdly, I think don't depend on parachurch organizations as your primary source of fellowship and worship, but make sure your church leadership implements measures of accountability. I think that churches that are independent may need to pay particularly close attention to this simply because they may not have a larger governing body that oftentimes already puts out policies and procedures for maintaining integrity and dealing with these types of situations. However, as we've seen time and again in the Catholic Church, these large organizations can also fail at this. So this drives home the point that it's important for people to pray for their pastors, their leaders, and teachers, and also proactively make sure that certain accountability safeguards are in place. Fourth, if you're having a hard time with us, with Ravi Zacharias or other leaders, Christian leaders and musicians who have recently fallen or decided to just flat out leave the faith, don't hesitate to talk to somebody. This isn't easy, and it feels like a real kick in the stomach, I think, when this type of thing happens. So definitely reach out, talk to somebody if you're really struggling with this. And finally, Brandon, if any clergy or church leaders are listening to this who may have crossed these lines themselves, please realize that this is something that does need to be addressed. Of course, we pray that there will be not additional examples like this, but of course, if you're listening right now and you are, again, a Christian leader, and you realize that you have crossed some lines, please make sure that you talk to a counselor right away and just be willing to do what's right. A lot of things are riding out that, including your own mental health and spiritual health, but also those that might be under your care. So this is something that is hard to address, but it is something I'm glad that we did address again today.
Once again, you've been listening to another edition of Real Answers with Christopher Anderson. It airs Wednesdays during the Noon Report. We tackle the tough topics facing today's families with Christian counselor Christopher Anderson.
All right, thank you, guys. Let's head outside one more time. Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Really no rest for the winter weary. Sure nice to see some sunshine today, but the air temperatures remain well below normal. And the next weather maker is ahead. It's going to produce major ice from East Texas to Carolina and Virginia. Mainly snow in our region. Could be some hefty tallies in central and eastern Pennsylvania. For this afternoon, though, it's a mix of clouds and sunshine, the high in the 20s. Tonight, increasing clouds, a low in the teens. Snow will arrive south of I-80 late tonight in Pennsylvania and spread across the remainder of Pennsylvania tomorrow and into the southern tier of New York in the afternoon, ultimately into the rest of New York State tomorrow night. The high tomorrow in the 20s. Snow will then taper on Friday with high temperatures in the 20s. And again, we think there could be significant snow accumulations by Friday morning across central and eastern Pennsylvania, lighter amounts north and west.
All right, Kevin Williams, finally at noon, a 90-year-old Seattle woman walked 6 miles through a foot of snow to get her first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. Fran Goldman says she scheduled her appointment last week, not knowing a major winter storm was on the way. Goldman made it, though, and was only 5 minutes late.
I got my vaccination, and then I was told I had to sit and wait 15 minutes to make sure there was no reaction, and I said, I'm delighted to sit.
I'm sure she was. She earned it, too. Fran Goldman set out from her home Sunday and walked 3 miles to the Seattle Children's Hospital for her shot, then 3 miles back home. She says when she goes to get her second dose, she hopes there's not a foot of snow she has to walk through. That's the world we live in this Wednesday. As always, thanks for coming along. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.